At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This Tuesday night, we are going to start the road to answering the age-old question. Who killed WCW? It's an original murder mystery series that Vice TV is premiering. 10 Eastern on Vice, and one of the men behind this series. You know all of his work from Dark Side of the Ring, Tales from the Territories, and not a stranger here at Post Wrestling, Evan Husney, who is joining us in between his worldwide press tour and giving some time for us. So thanks so much, Evan, for finding some time to join us and chat about a series that, right off the bat, here we are over 23 years later since WCW went out of business, and yet that period of time is so romanticized, so remembered, that here we are a quarter of a century later, and there's still an appetite. Is that surprising to you, or just a realization of where the wrestling audience is and a real high point for wrestling's history in most people's lives?
Well, first off, thanks for having me back. Really appreciate it. And I'm, you know, guilty as charged. I'm one of those who also fondly romanticizes the WCW era of wrestling. That is right when I was coming online as a serious wrestling fan. I was much more of a WCW kid than I was a WWF kid. I grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Nitro would come through quite regularly, so I would go to all the Nitros. All the N64 games are very much, you know, part of my repertoire at that time. So
that's such an underrated portion, I think.
It is.
Like, those games were so defining. If you're looking at, like, what preceded those games, like, they were just, it was like going from standard definition to high definition with a wrestling video game. And I think that brought in a lot of people that didn't know what WCW was.
100%. I mean, I was, like, when I was 5 years old, when I was a small kid, I was in the WWF, like the Hulk Hogan, Sergeant Slaughter era. And then I drifted off into other interests. And then it wasn't until we brought the N64 home and, like, what were the games that were popping off at the time? And that WCW versus NWO World Tour game, I was all about it, and then that's what got me watching the product again as a kid. So it was my gateway directly back into wrestling at that time. So I have a lot of fond memories for it. It's funny, framing it as the murder mystery, you know, the who killed WCW. It is, you know, for us, when we sort of arrived at that as the title of the show, which came a little late in the process, we were like, okay, it's definitely a tongue-in-cheek title, mm-hmm. because it's, you know, I don't want to obviously spoil anything, but there's obviously many factors of, you know, of different folks and things and ideas that contributed to the downfall of the company. But it's funny, like, seeing the wrestling community react to the title has been fun, because everyone's like, do we need this show? Like, do we need to investigate this over again? It's so simple. The answer is X, you know? But then everybody has a different name for that variable. So there is no consensus. A lot of people are, you know, it's so funny seeing, like, well, it's Vince Russo. Oh, it's so easy. It's Vince Russo. Oh, it's so easy. It's Eric Bischoff. Oh, it's AOL. Oh, it's Hulk Hogan, you know? So now it's kind of making me think that there is now more of a motivation to get some more common consensus on, you know, what led to the downfall of the company, because there's so many different varying opinions out there still. But the real genesis of this project came after we did the Bash at the Beach 2000 episode in Dark Side Season 4. That episode stood out so much in that season in terms of just online chatter and discourse. People still having so much interest in what happened in, you know, at WCW, or, you know, in the last year of its existence, and people getting in arguments with each other, seeing the people who were in the episode argue with each other on their respective podcasts after the episode aired. It just seemed like there's still so much interest and emotion and, you know, like, so much personal investment from both fans and the people involved, that it seemed like maybe this would be interesting to sort of go back. And, you know, fans have always requested us for Dark Side do a, you know, Death of WCW episode, but there was just always no way to do that in the time limits that we would have on the show, even in a 2-hour show. So, it just all kind of, you know, after I don't mean to be running on here, but after Tales from the Territories, you know, we wanted to work again with $7. Vice wanted us to work with them again, and so we sort of came up with like, well, what could we do? And we sort of arrived at this idea: what if we did like a more, you know, contemporary, elevated doc approach to the final years of WCW? And everybody instantly was like, oh, that's great. Let's do it.
How does your role change from the Dark Side of the Ring production to this when you're working with $7? And as you mentioned, this isn't your first go around with $7 after Tales from the Territories. But does your role drastically change from one versus more of a collaboration in this series?
It doesn't change that much. I mean, in terms of our collaboration with $7, there's so many benefits to it. They, you know, with Dark Side of the Ring, it's sort of this unspoken thing where, you know, there is that forbidden door, you know, with WWE. And I think with $7's involvement, it helps us to get better access to folks who may be under contract or have some arrangement with WWE. So that's always amazing. Like, for example, you know, getting to speak to people like Booker T for this show, or even Kevin Nash. We've never interviewed either of them for Dark Side of the Ring. And they helped us greatly on Tales from the Territories with access as well, too. But to answer your question, my role doesn't really change that much. You know, they're very supportive of, you know, what our vision is for the show. And yeah, it's, you know, we wanted to do something different stylistically, which I do think the show, is. I think it has a different tone. It's definitely a little more, it's definitely more irreverent in tone, more fun, funny. And, also, you know, it doesn't get into a big, you know, tragedy or much of a controversy. There is some controversy, obviously, and that's in the story, but it allows us to do something a little different. We changed gears with the visual look of the show. You know, so it was fun to be able to do something different. These collaborations that we do with $7, it allows us to kind of do something different after doing, you know, what's now 50 episodes of Dark Side of the Ring.
So I first heard about this series, and like, this was done, correct me if I'm wrong, like a lot of like the principal shooting and stuff. Like, this has been in the works for a while, and it preceded, Dwayne Johnson joining WWE as a member of the board of directors.
It did, yeah.
Did that play any role in any of this, or was this did one have to do with the other, essentially, in terms of any impact on the production, or was this largely completed by the point that news came out?
No, it wasn't completed, but it was well underway. This actually was a pretty fast turnaround, which was crazy. I mean, we must have pitched this idea at the end of last year and started shooting in December. So this has been a very quick turnaround for us, to do everything. It's been kind of crazy, actually, the turnaround. But yeah, no, it was complete news to us when it was announced, you know, Dwayne joining the board, was total news to us, but it didn't really affect anything in really any way. Other than, you know, us filming the interview when Dwayne wanted to do the interview, which also was something we hadn't planned on, but it was like, sure, no pushback for me. He was very enthusiastic about the first episode. He had seen the first episode and just thought it would be super awesome to be part of it. So we're like, yeah, hell yeah. And we wound up shooting that interview at WWE Raw. So us, like, with our cameras, you know, backstage at Raw was pretty cool. And something, again, you never would have thought it to happen. So that was pretty cool.
So you guys have, Vice has released the first 15 minutes of the show that you can check out in advance of the premiere, which, again, is Tuesday night at 10 Eastern. You also, I mean, for someone like yourself, I'm sure you were just salivating when you figured out that this camcorder footage existed from the final Nitro. Please tell me a bit about the discovery of this, how this was brought to you, because this to me was just this, it really is such a just a visual break from other things that you have done. And this footage, that how did this exist in someone's closet for 23 years?
Huh. Yeah, it was a game changer for us. We were well on our way in terms of editing the shows. So I can't remember exactly what month it was, but it was right in the middle of the process when Neil Pruitt, who for those who don't know, he was one of the main video producers, package producers, and he's just an overall super talented guy, very unsung in terms of the, you know, the whole story of his contributions to WCW. we interviewed him for the show, and he alluded to the fact that there was a guy out there who had this never before seen doc footage. It had never been used for anything. I wasn't even quite sure what it was shot for, maybe just personal, you know, documentation of it. But we were immediately like, we need to get in touch with this guy, work something out, and try to get this, because it could potentially completely change everything that we were working on. And so we got in touch with him. We worked out a deal, and he sent the footage, and it came to me first. I like looked at it. I looked at every frame of it, and it was like days worth of stuff, because it's everything leading up to the Nitro. Like I guess they went down to Panama City a few days before Nitro, and they had like these kind of different like pop-up events and parties to promote it and everything. So it's footage of all that. Footage of the ring crew setting up, you know, everything. And then it's like intimate access backstage with all the wrestlers, which you kind of saw in that clip I posted. And then it's interviews. There's a lot of interviews with people, just like how they're feeling, you know, about the last day. There's interviews with like Canyon, Booker T. There's a lengthy interview with him, Hugh Morris. And a lot of the like people who up till this point were almost nameless, like these like, you know, these guys who've been with the company for like 20 years, and they're like stage hands, they're grips, they're production designers, makeup artists, costume designers, all of their interviews on like how they're feeling about like everybody, like this is the last day. Because what's crazy about it is everybody lost their job. And there's this one shot in this behind the scenes footage that really hit me, which was a quick little shot of like someone posted a board that they wrote in Sharpie on the wall that said, "Put your name and number on this board so we can just keep in touch with each other." And it's like, wow, that really just puts it into complete. That's just like, wow, you know, like this is, these people have been a family on the road every week, you know, for years. And now this is it. You know, they don't know what's going to happen. Because one thing that I didn't really appreciate that much until I'd seen that footage or really got into like, what was going on with WCW in that last 2 weeks, you know? Because Eric was trying to buy the company at that time. It fell through, and then WWE came in. Everything moved very fast. But a lot of people, even if they knew like a few days before Nitro, they knew that WWE was going to buy it, they still didn't know what was going to happen with it. A lot of people were not told if it was going to be like, okay, WWE is just going to keep it going. You know, like we're just going to resume business as normal next week, maybe take a brief break, and then Nitro is going to be back. It's just Vince owns it now. Or if they're going to, how they're going to integrate it. So there was a lot of uncertainty with people's futures, and you can really tell that in the footage. And that was just so cool. So we immediately scrambled to try and work it into the show as much as possible. So you'll see it in episode one a little bit, but it really comes into fruition in episode four, the last episode.
Yeah, it's you know, Evan described it really well. Like I've only seen episode one, but it to me is like, it really just enhances things, taking you there, not just in front of the audience. Like this is during the day behind the scenes. It's just incredible that this footage has been out there for this long. It's preserved.
And Shane
it's
McMahon.
The Billy Kidman kid cam either. So it's
right. No, it's not that. And but like you see Shane McMahon in the ring, like during the day, you know, which I hadn't really processed. And then you see Bruce Pritchard and Gerald Briscoe for a minute, and it's just like, wow, really seeing the takeover, if you will, in real time is pretty wild.
For people that are kind of just familiar with a lot of the key characters in the story of WCW, two names that maybe they've heard the names but don't understand the significance of, explain to people Brad Siegel and Stu Snyder and their roles, because they have kind of been at the center of a lot of conspiracies over the years. Brad Siegel's in episode one. I understand Stu Snyder is in future episodes. So tell us a little bit about those two and why they were so important to have in the series.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is a good opportunity to shout out Guy Evans' book, Nitro, which, you know, Guy Evans, he wrote this amazing book on WCW, which if you thought you knew everything about what happened at that company, boy, are you wrong if you haven't read this, because it really opened my eyes. And it was a big source of inspiration for us going into this, and also led to us getting Guy Evans on board. You know, he's interviewed in the show, and, you know, he helped out with production and getting us in touch with a few people. Super key. And one of the big illuminating things out of Guy's book is just the Turner Broadcasting perspective of all of this, which, again, is not echoed in any other documentary on this subject. So all the Turner Broadcasting, like that whole perspective of people who don't care about wrestling, you know, they're part of this corporation, but they're also like in charge of the destiny of this company is a very unique situation. You don't have that situation at WWE, right? The buck stops with Vince. So it was very important for us, for our doc to be fresh and to be new, to incorporate that Turner Broadcasting perspective. And Brad Siegel, who basically he was the president of Turner Broadcasting, I think his title might have evolved over the course of WCW, but Eric Bischoff, that was basically Eric Bischoff's boss, was Brad Siegel. And so hearing his perspective on the whole thing is, you know, it's outside of the wrestling bubble, outside of the ecosystem. So it's a totally objective viewpoint onto how whatever, you know, he did. He was not a fan of WCW getting primetime television slots on Monday nights and then, of course, Thursday nights. But he embraced WCW when it was very successful. And, you know, became a cheerleader for it when it was, you know, the number one show on cable and kicking WWE's ass. Like, of course he was. But then when things started to go down, he found an inability to help sort of course correct it. Now, Stu Snyder was working for Turner Broadcasting, I think, in their home entertainment division during his WCW run. But he would go on later to become the president of WWE. Mm-hmm. And he oversaw the sale of WCW to WWE. And without sort of spoiling what we cover in the show, I will just say that there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there in terms of, you know, how WWE got ultimately purchased WCW. And that is something that is definitely explored in our series that you do not, again, another thing that's just not present in any of the other documentaries on this subject. So it's pretty illuminating for sure. And to have both of them speaking about it firsthand is very cool.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com.
From being involved in a lot of these interviews, and I mean, it's pretty much a who's who that you have with some outliers, but
yeah,
being that it's all these years later, did you sense that the gap in time has allowed for a lot of the key figures to be more reflective? And I mean, ultimately, there are people that are talking about their own legacies here, which can sometimes you own the wins and you had nothing to do with the L's. How did you find with as opposed to if you had been talking to these people a year or two after WCW goes out of business? You have all this time of reflection. Did you feel you got fairly honest appraisals of the good and the bad that, as you mentioned, you can spread a lot of this around? It's not one key answer that led to this company's demise.
100%. I mean, that was one of the things that was so cool about it, is everyone just like had no F's to give, it seemed like. There's no dog.
It was nice
fight.
To see Bret Hart come out of his shell. I mean, that's nice.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
really hard sometimes to get his honest opinion about things, but the opening line from Bret, I will not you can watch this, but it really does just set the tone for Bret Hart to be mixed.
It certainly does. And, you know, you got to have someone who has that opinion, you know, of the whole thing. It gives you a well-rounded viewpoint. But I think that was sort of the feeling I had about a lot of the people that we interviewed, was that they just kind of no F's to give, very like, you know, it's been 20 plus years, you know, and it that works in two different ways. It was hard to get them to speak enthusiastically about the good times because there is kind of some I don't know if like dejected is the right word, but you know, they're like with hindsight and everything, it's like knowing how things ended and what the legacy of it is. I think it was hard to get people to really remember those good times and to speak with them. And it was great when we got The Rock, because he, having some objectivity to it, was able to at least say, like, you know, when Hogan turned heel, it was awesome. When the NWO came together, that was unprecedented and amazing. So we needed a hype man of some kind for the show. And it was great that he served that purpose. But yeah, it was cool just seeing, you know, really unfiltered. I think that's the key word. People were super unfiltered with, and knowing that there wasn't a WWE involvement in the show. And especially with those other documentaries that came out, you know, just a few handful of years afterwards, and people were still, you know, under the, you know, on WWE payroll. There was just like, I'm sure that there wasn't like, people weren't being as honest then, you know, as they are now. And one example that quickly comes to mind that just caught me off guard, and you probably saw it in episode one, just a little thing, but just kind of illustrates what I'm trying to say, is like Eric Bischoff, when talking about, the NWO, you know, when Scott Hall and Kevin Nash were coming in, you know, as the outsiders and people didn't know if they were part of WWE. I've never heard Eric Bischoff say, unless he says it on his podcast, I'm not sure, but he said like, you know, and enough time has gone by now where I can say, yes, I allowed them to believe they were, you know, from the WWE, which up until that point, I think he was pretty pretty defensive of people who had that take. I know there was legal issues, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I think he didn't admit it. I mean, just straight up was like, yeah, I let him believe it now. Now enough time's gone by. Who cares? You know, and it's like, okay. You know, so there were things like that where people just kind of just, you know, like, and I know for Kevin Nash, it was really important. Like, what sold him on being a part of the project was the idea that it wasn't going to be a WWE version of it. Like, the victors who write history type of thing. Like, he was very excited to be a part of it because it was going to be this unfiltered, you know, this is how I feel and, you know, I don't got any F's to give.
Before I let you go here, I do have a wrestling documentary related topic to kind of pick your brain about that you're not involved in. And that is this big Netflix series that they are producing on Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
At this point, we are years into this. They have put millions into it.
Yeah.
But of course, in the course of all this, there's the Janelle Grant suit. And this is much a story that is still in process.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, now Netflix is directly involved in WWE. What do you think happens with this documentary series? Like, they have put so much into it. We don't even know if Vince McMahon is still involved with this at all. Like, do you eventually believe that Netflix puts this out? And because the dynamics have changed so much, I'm just kind of curious, as someone that's probably been following this like everybody else.
Okay, so I've heard some rumblings in the grapevine that, you know, is that a lot of the stuff that took place with, you know, the first time around Vince stepping down. When was that now? What was that?
That was the summer of 2022. He has the first resignation and he's back beginning of 2023.
And then he sells it to TKO or whatever, right? So I think that, like, the doc was, from what I understand, the doc keeps going through this series of being, like, finished or ready to go.
And something else drops.
Some big bomb goes off. And then, and it's tricky. I don't imagine, I don't know this for sure, but I don't imagine that the same level of access is there in terms of when those bombs were dropping. So I think that they're basically, I assume, I don't know this for sure, but that they have what they have, you know? And I think at some point they're going to have to decide if they're going to never release it or just wait a long time and release it or just release it, you know, and then whatever happens, happens, you know. I would imagine, if I had to guess, again, I don't know anything, but if I had to guess, that I think sooner rather than later, they're probably just going to put it out. And, you know, if it creates controversy, people are going to be chatting about it. If nothing happens, then whatever. But at a certain point, when you've invested so much time, and it's been a long time now, this much time and money into it, I would assume you got to do something at some point to sort of recoup on that. So that's what I would imagine. But again, I have no verifiable evidence of any of what I just said.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so interesting. Like, you have WWE named as a defendant in this, and I would imagine, like, do they want to be promoting a Vince McMahon documentary? Maybe there will be a time.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's, It's a very interesting one. The last thing before we let you go here.
Sure.
In the past 5 years, you have now produced 50 episodes of Dark Side of the Ring, another 10 Tales from the Territories, and now a four-part series on Who Killed WCW. What's your summer looking like? And are you kind of just like, you're just on the hamster wheel and continue to go? Because that's an astounding amount of, you know, original documentary programming that you and your partner Jason Eisner have been attached to. Are you, like, I imagine there are moments of burnout that you guys go through probably on a continued basis. But this has become the staple programming of Vice TV, and there's an audience for this.
Yeah, it's so crazy to look back on, you know, like we never thought, like when we did the Bruiser Brody pilot, we thought we were just making a documentary about Bruiser Brody, that it wouldn't balloon into a series. When someone, you know, when they asked us, what does a series look like? And then, you know, we do season one, you think that's it, or season two, which obviously I think really popped off for us. There was a time where, you know, and then COVID hit. It's like, well, maybe this is it. You know, we don't know. And then we just kept going and we have not stopped. I have not just been like, you know what, guys, peace out, 2 week vacation, I'm out of here. Like, we've not stopped making things, and it's pretty crazy. And there's a lot of people who are responsible for it other than just us. You know, there's tons of amazingly skilled editors and producers that have worked with us on this, on all of these shows. But yeah, it is wild. It's crazy to think we've done that many, and we treat every single one like, you know, it's its own unique little movie. So it kind of feels like we've made, you know, 60 plus movies, you know, in 5-6 years or whatever it's been. It's crazy. But, you know, there's no sign of us stopping. You know, Vice wants more Dark Side of the Ring always. So we're definitely going to keep that going as long as we can. And who knows, maybe there's other really cool opportunities. There's tons of other little opportunities like this WCW show. And that's what's cool, is it gives us the opportunity to do something different, to break outside the mold and to do something a little different. But never would have thought I'd made this much wrestling content in my life. It's like so much wrestling.
Well, maybe we will get some spinoffs. Who Killed Blank? We will look forward to it. So.
right.
So it's coming up this Tuesday night. Who Killed WCW premieres 10 Eastern on Vice TV. If you're in Canada, it'll be available on Crave, the same way you are able to access Dark Side of the Ring. And again, it's a ton of interviews, and I'm in particular looking forward to the Brad Siegel, Stu Snyder involvement. And I guess we can't necessarily expect the Robert Durst jinx cliffhanger at the end where someone has their mic on and admits to killing WCW at the end.
Right.
Probably not as simple as that, but looking forward to the series, Evan. Congratulations on another 4 hours of documentaries, and we appreciate your time joining us.
Thank you so much, John. Take care.